Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
Hey, welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show, and I am Paul Winkler. PaulWinkler.com is the website. It's also the first part of what you type in. If you've got a question, you want to run by me here, PaulWinkler.com/question. So this hour, I am going to spend on some questions that came up. Taught a workshop this week, and it was about estate planning, inheritances, receiving inheritances, giving inheritances, things that you need to think about. And I'm not going to rehash that because there's just a lot of stuff there, a lot of visuals, a lot of things to consider. But we got into all kinds of things like what happens when you inherit an IRA? What are the new rules regarding IRAs? You know, the 10-year rule. Who does it apply to? What about if you have a person that is kind of a spendthrift, or maybe they're a little bit more irresponsible than you'd like them to be? You know, what happens in that particular case? How can you control the IRA proceeds to some extent so that they don't blow themselves up? You know, the studies show that it's inheriting money is almost like, you know, what happens when you win the lottery. I mean, people that win the lottery, you know the stories, they're notorious, where people end up in worse shape than they were before they won the lottery. I mean, a lot of times you would never think that would be the case. But there are all kinds of social pressures and financial pressures and just, you know, maybe bad programming from your upbringing or whatever, a person that wins at their upbringing. You know, who knows? I mean, there are just so many different things. But we also find the same data for inheritances. You know, people actually end up in worse shape a couple of years later after they've inherited money. And you think, well, why would that be the case? Well, you'd have to watch the workshop to check that out. And you can. You can actually can, even though you weren't there at noon when I taught the workshop on Thursday, you'd actually go back, go to the website or go to paulwinkler.com/inheritance. And I think you can do it that way. I think you can do it. Try one of these two. This is terrible. I'm not sure exactly how. But I know you can go like webinars on my website, and you can actually do that. So you can check it out. Go to paulwinkler.com and search around for webinars. And then what happens, you get sent a link to the workshop where it's stored. But anyway, that's one way to do that. But we had, you know, it was one of those workshops that went like, oh gosh, like 10 minutes longer than I wanted. I wanted to go an hour, and there was just no way. There was so much stuff to cover. I got in the psychological aspects, step up in basis. You know, is it going away? What is it? How does it work? Got into IRAs, how you inherit them, what the issues are. And then we had a lot of questions, and I promised I would answer some of the questions here on the show. So I'm going to go through some of these things and handle. So, you know, one of the questions that came up was how to allocate money, and that was a time horizon thing, and I think that was fairly well answered in the workshop. You know, when you're allocating, you're dividing your money between various areas of the market, what you got to think about is your time horizon. You know, if I'm going to spend money in a short period of time, it has no business being in the stock market. You want to be in fixed income investments, like cash. You know, people say, I'm worried about inflation. Well, you know what? That's why we own stocks. But in the short run, if we look at it, inflation doesn't move very fast, and you can have stocks that do move rather rapidly in a downward direction. They can move upward in a rapid manner as well, but that's not what you're worried about if you're going to be spending money, is if you have a drop in the market. And, you know, if you look at history, you see that markets recover quite rapidly from downturns historically, but, you know, maybe not when you need the money. So, you know, you want to keep the money in cash. Don't worry about returns you might be missing. I look at it and go, I need to have liquidity. I need the return, as Mark Twain would have said, the return of my money rather than the return on my money is more important in that particular case. And, you know, so your time horizons are going to drive that. If I've got more than 10 years, I can be pretty much all stocks. If it's 6 to 9 years, I can be somewhere in the neighborhood, 75% stocks, 25% fixed income, you know, bonds, and really, really, really well diversified for those numbers to work out. You know, large companies, small, large value, small value, international, U.S., and so on and so forth. And I really get into that heavily in my book, Confident Investing. But that just gives you an idea of what it is. And I talk about that a bit in the workshop, so you can see that. So, you know, hopefully that question was answered. Next question John asked was, also, what about giving some money to kids before death? Is there a difference between inheritance between parents and another person? And I think that may have been a different person that asked that question. But let me just go and do that. What about giving some money to kids before death? Good question. If you look at giving money to kids before death, you know, one of the things you got to watch out for is, let's say if you have a piece of property and you want to, you know, transfer that over to a kid. And this actually goes in with somebody else's question. You know, what about handing money over to another person or handing a piece of property over? You know, I heard that there was something about a 5-year rule is what somebody was asking. You know, what if you transfer assets in a certain time frame? Can be tax-free. It's different. What you're dealing with a 5-year rule is, if I transfer a piece of property out of my name to another person, let's say a child, and let's say if I enter a nursing home, but I don't enter it for more than 5 years, then what happens is the asset's gone. It's not to be considered or brought back into my estate for Medicaid or 10 care. Now, here's the thing you really gotta watch out for, is if you go and transfer an asset out of your name to the child, number one, let's say that you paid, it's a piece of property, you paid $50,000 for it, you know, many, many, many moons ago, and now it's worth $300,000. Well, if you pass away and you still own that asset, and you pass away, and you actually give that asset, or it's actually the heirs get it at that point, they get a step up in basis. So, in essence, the asset was bought for $50,000; it's worth $300,000. If you had sold it while you were alive, then you would have had a $250,000 capital gain on it, or you would have gains on it, depending on if it's rental property or not. It might have been recaptured depreciation too. It gets kind of complicated. But in essence, you'd have a taxable gain if you had sold it. If they inherit it, then what happens is you can have, and I say can have, because if it's jointly owned, it gets a little bit more complicated, but you can have no taxes. You know, so let's say you let a child inherit it, and it's worth $300,000 when they inherit it, but you paid $50,000 for it. Well, if you had sold it yourself, right, $250,000 gain, $300,000 is the value at the point when you die, let's say, and then child sells it for $301,000. Well, they have a $1,000 gain. That's it. Instead of the $250,000, it's just $1,000, step up in basis. Now, that's what's being talked about. You know, are we going to get rid of that? Are we going to do away with it? But there's a real political fight not to have that go away for a lot of reasons. But in essence, that's one of the things that we're dealing with right there. Now, if we look at that 5-year rule and you've given it, or you've actually quit claimed it to somebody else, and then you can have a situation where, let's say, you quit claimed your house that you live in, let's say, to somebody else, to a child, let's say, and they're driving down the road, they drop a French fry and they get into an accident, and all of a sudden now they're subject to a lawsuit. Well, you can have a situation where they lose the lawsuit, and part of what they lose is the house that you happen to live in. And all of a sudden, now you got a problem on your hands. And then the other thing is this, what am I doing when I'm going and giving away property? You know, I'm trying to qualify for Medicaid, 10 cares, which basically what is in the state of Tennessee, which is welfare. And now the government decides what nursing home I go to. They got to find one with a bed, and it may not necessarily be nicest place around there, you know, because, you know, the Medicaid reimbursement rates aren't so great. So a lot of the nicer nursing homes aren't going to have beds available for somebody. And you end up in this lousy, terrible place there where people mistreat you or whatever. And now you're getting the government paying for your care, but what a terrible way to go. You know, so it's one of those things I think long and hard about before you do something like that. But that's the 5-year rule that we're talking about right there. And you know, so as far as giving money to kids before death, you know, you can transfer some things to them. That's the thing that you lose. It's that step up in basis. But, you know, one of the things that's really good is a lot of people will do it just to see what their kids do with money. I've seen people, you know, go and hand over some assets to their kids just to see, you know, let's say you got 3 kids and you go, well, let's see how these kids will handle this big bunch of, you know, you give them $20,000 each or something like that. And you see that one gun blows through it like, you know, water, and the other two save it. And you go, well, okay, maybe the one that blew through it like water, that's the one we set up a trust for, you know, to distribute money a little at a time so as to make sure that they don't sink themselves, because people are apt to do that when they don't really think a whole heck of a lot about the future. So it's a really good way to test the waters with kids. Now, you know, can I transfer my IRA? No, you know, that's not unless you cash it out, pay the taxes on it, and then transfer it over to kids or something like that. But, you know, that's typically something that you think about. You know, how can I go do that? Now, another thing that comes up for people is, well, what are the tax implications of it? Well, it used to, you know, and still is to some extent, when you're gifting, you have a $15,000 per person gifting limit. And people are like, well, what is that? Well, what happens is you have estate taxes. And estate taxes are where you have a certain amount of assets you can pass from one generation to another. Now, that limit is so high. I talk about that in the workshop, so you can check that out. It's in there. And again, the workshop is at paulwinkler.com, and you go to the online workshops, and you can, you know, check out in there and just sign up for it. The inheritance workshop is the one I just did, you know, so you can look at that there. But I talk about that, the transfers and amounts and how that works. But in effect, let's say if I had somebody with a gigundous, enormous estate, and it was huge, and they were going to be subject to estate taxes. Well, you actually have the ability to gift money. $15,000 is what the number is. I can gift money, and then what happens with that money is it's not part of my taxable estate anymore. If I go above that, it can go against what I'm able to give at death. So if I give $100,000, then I've gone $85,000 above, and then that is just $85,000 less that I can give, to keep it simple, at death. You know, so that's one of the things you think about, you know, in regards to, do I have a taxable estate? Now, it used to be that in the state of Tennessee, that if I gave above that amount, that you had to pay taxes right away. You know, because you went above the limit right away. That has gone away. So it's not an issue anymore. You know, you have to file a gift tax return. So, you know, you got to make sure that everybody knows that you gave a gift and what it is, and keep track of that. So that's something you just have to be aware of when you go above those levels. So hope that helps regarding that. It's, you know, giving money before death, you know, there are some reasons to do it. You have to be really careful about it. One of the things you'd think about with regards to that gift, it's per person. So let's say that you want to give to a child and you're married, and you want to give to one of your children, you want to give some money. So you got one child. Well, the husband and wife can get together and give $30,000. So they can do the 2 times the $15,000 to the one child. And if they got 3 kids, they can do that, you know, times 3 kids, $90,000. So, you know, you can give away an awful lot of money. Now, if you have a taxable estate, you know, let's say you do have a very, very large estate and it's taxable, some people will actually do that, and they'll do the gifts into what's called a life insurance trust. You know, it's an irrevocable life insurance trust. And in essence, what happens, they will actually do a gift, and they subject it to what are called crummy powers. I mean, it sounds weird, I know. but you can do that. And then in essence, it's where the kids can actually grab the money if they wanted to. They know if they grab the money, their hand's going to get slapped and it'll never happen again. So technically what they do is they leave. They say, I know mom and dad give me $15,000, but I know if I touch it, I'm dead meat. So they don't touch it. Well, what happens is they have a period of time. They can touch it. They don't touch it. Then the gift actually goes to buying life insurance, pays for the premium. Why would you do that? Well, because you pay the premium, and then the death benefit is because it was subject to a gift and it was subject to those crummy powers, it's not part of the taxable estate. You know, so you can avoid estate taxes that way. So it's a pretty common technique that's been used to do that. Now, again, unless you got a really, really large estate, probably not something you have to even worry about or necessarily would do. And, you know, it's not something you have to ever really think about a whole lot. But yeah, that's giving money to kids before death. Good way to do it is just, you know, make sure that, you know, you don't give away anything that you might need later in the future, and be very, very leery if it is something that is actually, you know, trying to get you qualified for Medicaid or some kind of welfare, because that can come back and really bite you. Probably better to look into long-term care insurance or something like that. So is there a question? One question was this. Is there a difference between inheritance from parents or another person was one of the questions that was asked. Let's say, you know, if you look at inheritance from, you know, parents, typically there's going to be a difference between inheritance between one spouse and another. You know, that's one of the exceptions where you actually get money from a spouse and you can take like an IRA on as your own asset. You know, so that's one of the big differences right there. Now, if you're inheriting it from somebody else, you know, then what happens is you're going to be, it's kind of like if you have a parent that passes away and you're a child of that parent and you inherit their IRA, then you're subject to the 10-year rule, which I spent a ton of time on in that workshop, how that new 10-year rule works for distributions for IRAs. And, you know, so what has to happen for a lot of people, it has to come out inside of a 10-year period, but there are a bunch of exceptions. And I talk about how it works if you're subject to some of those exceptions. But if you're like a friend or, you know, if you're maybe a extended family member or an acquaintance and you let an acquaintance inherit a bunch of money from you with an IRA, you're subject to that 10-year rule. They have to set up what's called an inherited IRA. Now, it can be one of the exceptions if the friend or person that inherited it is less than 10 years younger than the person. That's one of the exceptions, and you can actually do what's called a stretch on that. And I talk a little bit about what the stretch is on there. Now, if it's another asset, something like that, no, I mean, you know, for most people, it's going to fall under the first thing I was talking about for estate taxes, and it's $11.7 million per person. That's a pretty high number. So the likelihood of an estate tax being due is pretty low. You know, it really gets down to it. So inheriting it, I remember one of my clients, I had a client that passed away. He didn't have any close family members. And this was one of his questions. He had a person that took care of him. And, you know, when he was sick, as he was getting older, he was very elderly and had somebody that took care of him. And that's exactly what happened, is he gave this guy for taking care of him a lot of his estate. And he had, you know, a house and he had some investment assets and IRAs and things like that. And he had a few people actually that took care of him, now that I think about it. And they each inherited, they got the step up in basis, you know, whatever the value was that they paid for the stuff, got it to today's date. And then the people were able, and these people did not have a lot of means. So what they ended up doing is selling out of the investments, and it was an absolute blessing to them to receive this stuff. You know, so did that and the inherited IRA. They just had to take distributions over a certain period of time, but they didn't have to. And these people didn't. They wanted the money right away because they wanted to spend it right away. So they actually took the IRA and distributed It's usually not a good idea to do that because you can drive yourself up into a really, really high tax bracket. It may make more sense to spread it out over a period of years. But, you know, that's generally the answer. You know, there isn't this difference between them. Biggest difference is between spouses. And, you can actually take on an IRA as your own if you are a spouse inheriting your spouse's IRA. You know, if you inherit it from a friend or something like that and go, man, I'm just lucky. you had a rich uncle or something like that. The classic story goes. But, you know, some of those tax laws that I talked about earlier apply right there, you know, the step-up in basis. But IRAs are a little bit more difficult these days to inherit.
I want to tell you about a new Q&A feature I have for the show. There's now a form on my website where you can submit questions for me to answer on the show. You can ask any question you want related to finance, money, and investing. You can even ask some fun, random questions, too. Then we'll review each question that comes in and choose some to answer. We'll even let you know how to hear the answer to your question. Submit your questions by going to paulwinkler.com/question. That's paulwinkler.com/question.